Well, the rollout of the Affordable Care Act and in particular healthcare.gov is a story that affects every American. It is also, though, a political story. And today we're joined by two of the best political writers around, Mark Halperin of Time Magazine and John Heilman of New York Magazine. Their latest book is Double Down. It's a tell-all book about the 2012 presidential campaign. They also wrote Game Change about the 2008 campaign, which was made into a movie for HBO. They are with us in the studio. Welcome to both of you.
Jeremy, great to be here. Thank you.
Well, before we get to the book, I just want to get your thoughts on what we just heard and this the rollout of this healthcare.gov. How big of an issue is this for President Obama's legacy overall? I'll start with you, John.
It's the biggest possible issue. It's bigger than even I think people totally comprehend. I mean, I think the president knows that there's nothing that's more important to the continued success, to the, any possible success he's going to have over the course of the next 3 years, his last 3 years in office, and to his long-term legacy. I mean, he did a lot of big things in 2009, 2010, re-regulated Wall Street, passed the stimulus, saved the auto industry. But this was the thing that Democrats have been trying to do unsuccessfully for 40 years. It was the thing that he had to put all of his back into, take on a huge political water to get it done. If in the end this works, it puts him in the pantheon of great Democratic presidents ever. If it fails, it not only is a huge black mark on his record, but also it puts a big dent in the promise of 21st century liberalism.
Well, Mark Halperin, how has he responded to the missteps, do you think?
Well, I think he's trying to keep everything together. He doesn't want to relitigate the entire law, and he does want to inspire confidence. But he does have to, and as he's done, he does have to admit launch has not been good. And I think in the coming days, the proof to some extent will be in the pudding. If the system works, if people get signed up, if it gets some momentum, if the brand of the Affordable Care Act gets a better polish up than it's had so far, I think the president can turn things around. But that's a lot of ifs, and it does, as John suggested, it does dwarf everything else that he's got going on both at home and abroad.
Well, and one of the big things that he's got going on or would like to have going on is immigration reform. I want to take a listen to the former senior advisor to the president, David Plouffe, speaking yesterday on ABC's This Week about what he expects will be ahead for the White House after the State of the Union speech. Let's listen.
I think the president's numbers will recover. I think people's confidence will recover. And then we need to push Congress to do immigration.
Mark Halperin, is there any chance, do you think, that immigration reform gets passed next year?
I think there's very little at this point that anything of consequence will get done in the president's weakened state. You know, we write in the book about how immigration was something he wanted to do very much in the second term, that he'd held his tongue a bit on it in the first term until reelected. But without sort of the bipartisan feeling that both sides want to get it done without Republicans feeling either afraid of the president or invested in his success, I don't think he can get immigration or anything else done as long as Republicans control the House.
All right. Well, let's get to the book. And I must say that like Game Change, the first one, it is very hard to put down once you get into it. A lot of big reveals in it. Of course, one of the biggest ones was that the White House did think about dumping Joe Biden from the vice presidential ticket in 2012 and replacing him with Hillary Clinton. But you also report in detail about the GOP primary campaign and some of the backroom conversations that were going on between people. Why doesn't any of this stuff come out during the campaign, John?
Well, you know, you hear there are small emanations of it that get picked up in the press at the time. But, you know, one of the great advantages that we have in doing these books is we have the luxury of time, and we don't have that much time. I mean, to get the book out as quickly as we do, we have to move pretty quickly. But people are, you know, the way that the modern media works with its very high metabolism is, you know, people focus on things on subjects of controversy or subject of interest for a very brief period of time, and then they move on to the next thing. Mark and I, you know, are able to do 500 interviews with 400 people as we did. Wow. In this book, and most of those interviews take place over long stretches, 2, 3, 4 hours at a time. We're able to really drill down on these topics that other people just don't really have the time to do, and with that time, the quantity of interviews also has a qualitative effect. We end up being able to get a little deeper, in some cases a lot deeper than people can under the pressures of the minute-by-minute news cycle that we live under normally.
Is a lot of this stuff, though, interviews that you're doing during the course of the campaign and saying, I won't report on this until after it's over?
Both the interviews we do before Election Day and the ones after, and most of them are after, are done on an embargoed basis for the book. People know the book is going to come out about a year after Election Day. And so it does allow people to speak freely. It'd be better if they were all on-the-record interviews we could use right away. But the fact is, we wouldn't get the kind of information we get, the kind of inside stories that people like to read about, the dialogue, the sort of terms of the relationship, the unvarnished reactions that people have to some of those very visible situations, if we ask people to speak in real time, knowing that it could impact the outcome of the election or be revealed in the immediate aftermath of Election Day.
Well, and as you write in this, a lot happened in this campaign, a lot of ups and downs for all the candidates. But I want to focus on the one who won the GOP nomination, Mitt Romney, and this video that became a really big moment in his campaign, a bad moment for him, this infamous 47% video. Let's take a listen to a little bit of that.
All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what.
John Heilemann, is that what sunk the Romney campaign in the final analysis?
No, I don't think that's what sunk the Romney campaign, although it was a pretty devastating blow in the sense that, you know, Governor Romney had, both in ways that were humorous and in ways that were less humorous, provided a lot of fodder to the Obama campaign to allow it to paint him as an out-of-touch plutocrat. And they spent a lot of money and effort doing that, especially over the summer of 2012. We talk about the big strategic decision that they made to front load their advertising. They spent all of that summer attacking him on Bain, on his income taxes and his refusal to release much of that data. By the time the 47% video came out, what it did was kind of was like the last nail in the coffin on that image, on that strategy,
it
on that
solidified
framing.
That.
It was like here was this thing that undecided voters have been listening to the Obama campaign paint that picture or watching them paint that picture all summer long. And now here was Mitt Romney in his own words seeming to confirm exactly what the president's team was saying about him.
All right. Well, stand by, both of you. We'll be back in a minute. We'll talk more about this. Mark Halperin and John Heilemann, their new book is called Double Down, Game Change 2012. It's all about the 2012 election. And when we come back, we'll look forward also to 2016 and see what they're seeing coming up.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at GEICO.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's Here and Now. Let's get back to our conversation with Mark Halperin and John Heilemann about their book, Double Down. It's a tell-all book about the 2012 presidential campaign. And you spend a lot of time in the book talking about the spouses of the candidates, whether it be Ann Romney, Michelle Obama, the wives of John Huntsman, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum. How big of a role do the spouses in these campaigns play in the decision-making, Mark?
Invariably, they play a huge role. And one of the things we try to do in the book is to write for a general audience, not people who are interested just in politics and primaries and caucuses and polling, but the relationships that exist if for people who are running for president. None of them have a more important relationship than they do with their spouse. And in the case of all the major candidates who we write about, and some of the would-be candidates like Haley Barbour of Mississippi, Chris Christie, the spouses are front and center. In this case, with the exception of Michelle Bachmann, they're all female spouses. Yep. They're all wives. But, you know, Michelle Obama is one of the toughest figures to write about in America because most of the people around her are generally reluctant to speak. We did our best to kind of get inside and write about her attitude about her husband first, whether he should run for re-election, and then when they decided that he should, just how passionately she felt about using her own popularity to help him.
Does she get the last word with him or Joe Biden?
On policy, she rarely weighs in, much less than, say, Hillary Clinton did. More in the line of like Laura Bush. But on a few issues, she felt passionate about. Gay marriage is one issue we write about in the book. Same-sex marriage was something she did feel strongly about, and she was one of the voices in the president's ear. But on most policy issues, she takes does not want a critical role. But in some of the key moments in this election, for instance, after the president did badly in that first debate with Governor Romney in Denver, she was front and center in saying this needs to be solved.
John Heilemann, how big of a shadow did the selection of Sarah Palin as VP candidate in 2008, which you guys have written about in that great movie that you did for HBO, how big of a shadow did she cast over the selection process for Mitt Romney in 2012? And, of course, he went with Paul Ryan.
She cast a pretty big shadow. And without being too self-referential here, you know, with the movie came out in the early part of 2012, and there was so much coverage about it that the Romney team was sort of intimidated by, or there was a cautionary tale for them. So Beth Myers, the woman who ran Mitt Romney's vice presidential vetting process, you know, she was shocked when she got a lot of news media attention. She looked back at prior head vetters and was like, "No one ever has been identified in this way." Now, after Sarah Palin, I'm the subject of a lot of scrutiny in a way that no one else ever before has. And so she took extraordinary precautions to make sure that there were no leaks out of her operation. She and Governor Romney, when he looked at when he thought about how he wanted to choose a vice presidential nominee, the Palin precedent loomed very large. He said, "I don't want distractions. I want someone who is immediately perceived to be qualified to be president, and I want to make sure that we have someone who we don't have a lot of unintended consequences or unexploded landmines that are out there." He was very mindful of the ways in which Palin proved, although a very exciting force in 2008, also a problematic one for John McCain.
She did excite the base, and I want to get to this because a lot of your book is about the GOP primary and the amount of tacking to the right that these candidates have to do in order to get their party on board for the general election. Is there any way to combat that, to get to a system where they don't have to go so far away from the center to win?
Well, I think Governor Romney, in the view of many people, made a mistake in doing just that. The previous Republican nominees had been more centrist and had been willing to sort of stick a little bit of a stick in the eye of the far right wing of their party. It's possible to do. Bill Clinton, George Bush, Barack Obama, all three of them ran to some extent telling hard truths to the base of their party and won. We write in the book about Governor Romney. You know, a lot of people say Governor Romney's not that interesting a figure. I think the portrait we have of him and sort of the psychology that guided him, that forced him, he felt, to stick to the far right, even after he won the nomination, in many ways doomed him as much as the 47% video we talked about earlier.
Why didn't a third-party candidate emerge this time around? And do you think that there will be one in 2016, a real viable third-party candidate?
Well, you know, it was an interesting thing. We don't write about it that much in the book, but, you know, Americans Elect was the organization in 2012 that was supposed to do that. It turns out, you know, it's very hard to recruit a candidate who is sufficiently compelling. I mean, there are all kinds of ideological issues about where the center of gravity would be for such a candidate, and no third party or independent candidate has been able to find that, not since Ross Perot most successfully did it, when he only got 19% back in 1992. But this was also a group that was extremely well funded and was getting ballot access across the country, but couldn't find someone who was credible, who was willing to step up and seize the mantle, and they ended up without a candidate, even though they had done all the legwork and all the infrastructural work that people thought was kind of would be the thing that would open the door to this happening in 2012.
Well, you write, I think, that John Huntsman was even a possibility for this group. Is that right?
He thought about it. He was, and one of the people they looked at, I mean, the sort of general view of where an independent most could succeed and sort of the biggest energy around an independent candidate, for the most part, is the notion of socially moderate, fiscally conservative. The fact is, President Obama and Governor Romney are, to some extent, obviously their critics would disagree at one point or another, but by the standards of most of the world, they are pretty economically conservative and socially moderate. And that makes it difficult for someone to see where the space is. You have to be very rich probably to do it, very famous probably to do it, and you have to find a lot of dissatisfaction with the two major party nominees. Governor Romney and the president both did okay with their own parties.
I was thinking as I was reading this that the last campaign was really the first one where Twitter was I think it was the first presidential campaign that there was Twitter in. And you write about Ann Romney's first tweet happening during the campaign. And I wondered, is something else going to come along, do you think, for 2016 that wasn't around in 2012 and that will completely change the nature of these presidential campaigns, John?
Well, smell-o-vision.
Yes, right. Pop-up, scratch and sniff. I don't know about that. I mean, look, we've seen Mark and I have been doing this both for a couple decades each, and every successive election cycle, you've seen something that has changed the game in terms of technology and media. So from cable television to the internet itself, to blogging, then to Facebook, then to Twitter. Usually, though, you kind of get to have a hint of what that next thing will be. There was Twitter in 2008. It just wasn't very big. And so by the time it hit in 2012, you sort of could see that one coming. It's not clear what that would be in 2016, although I think probably if there was something, it would have something to do with photography, you know, which is like
Instagram.
In terms of mobile communications, that's sort of where a lot of the energy is, although I don't know exactly how that would change the game in the way that Twitter did in this past cycle.
We just have about 30 seconds left, but was it easy to write a book together?
It was effortless because we see the story the same way. We're both interested in politics in terms of human beings and relationships, and that's an easy story to tell if you think of it that way.
There's only one problem, which is that Mark is the only human being on Earth who likes sushi more than me. So we sometimes have squabbles over how much sushi to eat.
John Heilemann and Mark Halperin, they are the authors of the book Double Down, Game Change 2012, all about the 2012 elections. Is there going to be a movie?
HBO's optioned it. Stay tuned, as they say in the television business.
We will stay tuned. I know Robin has something she'd like to say.
No, it is fascinating listening. I just wanted to apologize to both John and Mark for dumping my glass of water on them.
By accident.
To welcome you to the studio.
Well, it's an old Boston tradition.
I hadn't had a chance to shower yet this morning, so that was helpful. I appreciate that.
Wanted to make it feel more casual, like Morning Joe, you know, so you'd feel at home.
This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from Olin College of Engineering, working to educate the next generation of engineering innovators to solve the world's complex technical challenges, olin.edu, and Nuance, with Dragon speech recognition software for students, professionals, parents, and any computer user. More at nuance.com.